how many writings up to this point talk about the underworld?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the world that is underneath us.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many beliefs that from all of the different world religions at that point,
mm-hmm.
that there were the heavens,
mm-hmm.
there was the earth,
mm-hmm.
and there was the underworld.
Yep.
So it was very much just a vertical,
yes,
idea that and you know, you can imagine that each level just goes on forever.
Mm-hmm.
The heavens, the earth, and the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so this idea is like, well, maybe, and as I said, it's a proto-vision of the universe to say, maybe it's the structure is different than we've thought of up to this point.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to another episode of Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I'm Seth Payne, and I'm here with my ever co-nerd Cesar. And today we are starting our new series on the history of physics. And you know, last week we did kind of a quasi-introduction episode looking at natural philosophy and its implications on science. But now we're going into a history, you know, just like we did with math, we're going to do a number of episodes on the history of physics, looking at a number of physicists and how the discipline of physics developed over the years. And then we're going to do probably longer than we did in math. We're going to do a number of episodes on different topics in physics. Mm-hmm. And there's so many developments in physics in the last 50 to 75 years that we want to kind of go into. And one, because there are a lot of, but two, I know for Cesar as well, these are topics that really interest us. And so we're going to go into that later. But now we're doing the history of physics, and we're starting like we did with math back with the Greeks. But before we jump into it, I want to remind you that if you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates for when we put new things out there. If you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get cool mugs and t-shirts. There are also some other neat designs on our site. We just put out this new design of Father of the Big Bang, and we're going to be talking about, you know, we've already talked about, yeah, Father George LaMontre a few times, but we're going to have an episode specifically devoted to him in a little while, and you know, hopefully someday he'll become a saint, and he can be the patron saint of our channel, which would be
awesome. That would be great.
We now have a way for you to financially support That Nerdy Catholic. If you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, we have a new campaign up that will allow you to help support us financially, and we would really appreciate that to be able to help out with the equipment and time and everything. So anything you can do to help would be really appreciated. But now let's jump into Greek scientists.
Yes.
Lead us off, Cesar.
We are starting with Anaximander today, you know, and some people say, wait, why not Thales? I think Thales is very important. It's very influential, but you know, this guy was living in the time when Thales was living in the same city, by the way,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he just born 10 years after the born of Thales de Mileto. His historian said that he born on 610 before Christ, and he lived up to 546 before Christ. No,
mm-hmm.
So there you go, 56 years, mm-hmm. that has lived this this Greek physicist. No? So, as I said, he was born in Miletus, no? And he was also, he knows Thales, no? So he was one of the physicists that, you know, Aristoteles also referenced to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know that we didn't have any writings from Anaximander. Mm-hmm. All we know from Anaximander, from Thales, and for all the pre-Socratics were because of the writings of Socrates and his disciples.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Socrates didn't write anything, he said the things and his disciples were the ones writing.
Mm-hmm.
But Socrates referenced Thales, Socrates referenced Anaximander, and so we are going to talk about mm-hmm. Anaximander mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
No?
Well, that's an interesting, you know, place to start. And it makes me think of scripture. Now, that seems like a stretch, but mm-hmm. I'll say this. When we, everything that we have of scripture, especially the Old Testament, you know, well, we look at the, you know, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, and tradition says we say that those are all from Moses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Moses didn't write anything down. We don't know who actually wrote down mm-hmm. all of those books. But one of the things that we've lost in modern culture was something that as humanity we did for thousands of years, which was pass down knowledge orally.
Yeah.
And I this is just kind of a little aside as we go into this series, and especially talking about Anaximander, that people learn things and then shared them orally.
Mm-hmm.
And then those people shared it, and those people shared it. I truly believe that they took a lot more pains to be accurate, where, you know, I think some people would say, well, it was just a game of telephone.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we know how accurate
mm-hmm.
a lot of the stuff was once it was written down? But since most people didn't know how to read or write,
mm-hmm.
preserving things orally and in as much detail as possible was a skill that we don't have anymore, that was, you know, that people did all the time, especially when someone was influential and important and was coming up with new ideas. People would say, okay, well, those are very important, so we need to do whatever we can to record them orally as accurately as possible until someone finally says, okay, well, now let's get this down in writing.
Yeah, no, that's really important. For example, I want to open a little parenthesis here, because also Incas didn't have a writing system.
Mm-hmm.
And all the and we are talking about Incas up until the Spaniards came to America,
mm-hmm.
which is 1500 something.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a writing system. And all the traditions that Incas people know were passed for centuries orally.
Yeah. No? Yep.
So going back to Anaximander, one of the things that Anaximander did, he, as many people that calls the same wise in that moment, he looked at the sky. No?
Mm-hmm.
He looked at the sky, he looked at the telescope. He saw that, you know, the sky has stars, that there was a moon, that there was a sun. And those moon and sun not only move from day to night, but the position relative to them move during the year, mm-hmm. no? And most of the time he saw the celestial bodies were round.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, he started thinking, well, if all in the sky is round,
mm-hmm.
should also the earth be round? So in his conception, he thought that the earth was a round disk.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he didn't thought about a sphere, because he said, well, if you put outside the sphere, you will fall.
Mm-hmm.
But in his mind, he thought the earth was floating in the space as a round disk.
Mm-hmm.
And all the celestial bodies that were round were mm-hmm. in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
No? And that's a nice concept, because you have to think about the earth here, the stars that from the view of Anaximander, and please remember, Anaximander is 6 centuries before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
He saw that the stars were there, not moving, but the sun and the moon were moving a lot. And the trajectories on the sun and the moon has to be, from his mind, a circle trajectory, And so many people say, no, well, we know that it's an ellipse. You know, and I'm going to be a little math here, because the eccentricity of the Earth as an ellipse, it's really small. So if you don't take that attention to detail, you will think that the Earth is doing a round circle around the sun, because it's not like this kind of ellipse. It's just a circle a little bit more less from one side to another.
No? Yeah, so this is, you know, 550 to 600 years before Christ.
Yes.
And as we talked about in the episode on Galileo, even then, at that point, he couldn't prove that the Earth went around the sun, because the power of the telescopes was not enough to see the parallax of the stars.
Exactly.
So we're talking now 2,000 years before that.
Yeah.
and so no one can say, well, how could he not know it was an ellipse and not a circle?
Yes. Right?
Yeah. The development of science has gone along with the development of the equipment that we can measure with.
So he has the idea that, we have the fixed star there. And then in his mind, the star where 9 times the distance from the diameter of the flat Earth, that were the stars fixed there. And then twice the distance of that, so 18, will be the orbit of the moon. And 3 times the distance of the star will be the sun rotating around. No. So that was the world of Anaximander, world of the universe. No? A floating disk. The Earth is a floating disk, with the stars 9 times the distance. The moon, 18 times the distance to the Earth, and the sun, 27 times the distance to the Earth. The sun being the most, the farthest. But that's one of the things that I want to highlight, because Anaximander, as Greek as he was very influenced about, his worldview. Has also the accounts of Hesiod's Theogony. No, Hesiod's Theogony is Hesiod's Theogony is one of the books that Hesiod wrote about their gods. No, and in Theogony, he mentioned that the angels fall during 9 days from the stars to the Earth. So they were in freefall during the 9 days. After in the 10th day, when they already arrived to the Earth, they got to the place that they will be to in Earth. No, but that fall of the nine days in his mind was, whoa, then the star should be 9 times the distance. And then the other measurements, it wasn't because he was trying to have an accurate measure, because as you correctly mentioned, he didn't have the instrument for that. He said, well, then if that's the stars, the moon has to be farther. So he put it twice as farther as the star. And the sun, the astro king, has to be farther than that. So 3 times the distance. Yeah. That was his worldview.
Yeah. Well, and it would be 2,500 years after that we would actually be able to measure the distance accurately to any celestial object.
Yes.
But it's so interesting, this, and it's hard to think with everything that we know now about the universe, the size and the shape of the universe, to actually look at this discovery, this development, and say this was a very early idea of there being a universe.
Yes.
And not just the Earth and the sky.
Yeah.
Why would you think that there had to be an end to the Earth? As you said, there's still this, it would be a few hundred years before the first Greeks proposed that the Earth was round. Mm-hmm. If you believe that the Earth is flat, then why wouldn't you think that it just goes on forever?
Mm-hmm. And that's there's another revolutionary idea. We'll say, why would you think the Earth is at this floating?
Mm-hmm.
Because many people will say the Earth stands over something. Remember, mm-hmm. even in the time of Galileo, there is a lady of this of the legend asking, "Hey, where is the Earth sitting around?" Well, it's sitting over a giant tortoise. Oh, and where is the giant tortoise sitting over around? Oh, very clever man! It's tortoise all the way down.
All the way down. Yeah.
So, but you have this. So we are talking Galileo, probably 15 centuries after Christ.
Yeah.
And this is Anaximander, six centuries before Christ, saying, "No, it's this floating in the universe."
Yeah.
What a revolutionary idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you look at how many writings up to this point talk about the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the world that is underneath us.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many beliefs that from all of the different world religions at that point,
mm-hmm.
that there were the heavens,
mm-hmm.
there was the earth,
mm-hmm.
and there was the underworld.
Yep.
So it was very much just a vertical idea that and you know, you can imagine that each level just goes on forever.
Mm-hmm.
The heavens, the earth, and the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so this idea is like, well, maybe, and as I said, it's a proto-vision of the universe to say, maybe it's the structure is different than we've thought of up to this point.
Yes.
Yeah, that idea of the earth floating, it's one of the things that's been lost to time, but it would be to be a fly on the wall in one of those conversations that he brought to the, why do we have to, you know, why does there have to be the structure as we see it? Maybe we're just floating in space.
Yes, yes. And that idea came to him because he was looking at all of the other objects in the universe who are floating. Well, why should we be not floating?
Yeah, why should we be any different?
Yeah, that's fascinating, no? The other fascinating idea is how Anaximander conceived the seasons, no? So, if we thought about the disk that is the Earth, no? He thought that the sun and the moon were doing around the Earth circles, but they were not doing, you know, there was not exactly a parallel around the disk, but there was an inclination of 38 point something, no? So the sun do this. So obviously from the air, you will see the rise and the sun on the sky, mm-hmm. no? And why would Anaximander think about they were inclined in 38.7, because that's actually the inclination of Delphi from the Earth to, you know, the inclination from the equator, 38.7, the position of Delphi, where he makes his observation.
Okay.
So that's very clever. See, they are not exactly up down, you know. There is an inclination of the sun, no? So he, in his mind, he made this, you know, this 38.7. And how did he explain the seasons, no? The summer would mean that the sun will shift a little up, and then we'll have more daylight time in summer.
Mm-hmm.
In winter, you will shift the sun a little down. You will still see the sun going up and down, but you will have less daytime because of the horizon there. No.
Yeah, you said you can see how this then develops into the correct understanding of the position of the Earth and the sun and the, you know, how the seasons work. He took the information that he had and he made the best estimate that he could.
Yes.
And as we all know, you know, with science, that's the whole process. You make an observation, you say, there has to be some logic behind this. Mm-hmm. There has to be reason why it happens like this. you come up with a hypothesis and you test it.
Yes, yes. And that's one of these things that it fascinates me, how he was able to do this, no?
Mm-hmm.
To measure this, to mm-hmm. measure these angles, to determine this easy, I will say, easy concept of the early universe, how mm-hmm. it should work. Mm-hmm. No? And then you correctly say he made the observation, he made his hypothesis, and then he would rather wait, you know, summer and winter to test his hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, kind of does work.
And then he diagrammed it.
Yes. So I think this process of Anaximander looking at the stars and determine what should be the universe around it. How does this movement go around this the sun and the moon? And then making his own model is an early attempt of astronomy and also of trying to draw a picture of the whole universe.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that Anaximander did is he tried to draw a world map from the known part of the world.
No? Mm-hmm.
We are not going to count Americas. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows that America exists at that point, but you have to give him credit of trying to draw a map of the whole world, at least mm-hmm. at the known world up to this point. That's a very predecessor of cartography
mm-hmm.
and other science,
mm-hmm.
which is derivative of physics, because if you don't have correct measurements, you cannot do cartography. It's a derivative of physics, but there you go. He did that 600 years before Christ.
Yeah. Well, and like a lot of the other topics we talked about, it's so clear that he had a sense that the world made sense.
Mm-hmm.
That there were laws that governed how the universe worked, and he said he had a desire
mm-hmm.
to understand it more in as much detail mm-hmm. as he could, and even this image of how this ring of the orbit of the sun moves in order to see, well, how does this make the seasons change?
Yes. And that's a very important thing that you're bringing up, Seth, because if we remember, Hesiod also wrote about the fall of Troy, and that was, historians date the fall of Troy like 1,000 years before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember from the fall of Troy, you know, the it's called the Iliad, actually, the book, no?
Mm-hmm.
The worldview of the people were, oh, it is raining, it is because the gods are doing.
Yep.
It is sunshine too much hard, it's been the gods' will of that, no?
Mm-hmm.
Everything happened because the will of the gods.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Everything, the seasons, the dry time, you know, the lack of rain, the lot of rain,
mm-hmm.
the natural disaster. Everything is because the gods were angry, or the gods were happy, or whatever.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Anaximander took his time to separate that concept from his and say, maybe there is logic,
mm-hmm.
and he came up with a model
mm-hmm.
that. For that time fits the predictions
you know,
of what's happening and what is going on. You
know? Yeah.
Without the intervention of the God put the sun here, or the God made the sun or the moon moving here. No.
Mm-hmm.
He made it logic, as you said. No.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the first emanation of science that we have recorded up to this time. No?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and even thinking of then the structure of the universe, as we've said, that going from a view that the Earth is pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
This is everything, and there happen to be little things up in the sky, but there's the Earth, there's the sky, and there's what's above us and what's below us.
Mm-hmm.
but the earth is it, mm-hmm. is the universe, mm-hmm. to this first idea. It's like, well, maybe it's not just the earth. Maybe there's this space, mm-hmm. and the earth is floating in it.
Yes. Yes. And the other thing is that the fact that he thought that the celestial bodies, you know, were are not, so before him there was the conception that, you know, all the celestial bodies were attached kind of on the same plane, like, mm-hmm. if you put, you know, when my kid was very little, we put in the ceiling, we put stars, mm-hmm. moon, like, mm-hmm. that, you know? So kind of that, if you turn off the lights, there was some light, yeah. there. It was nice, no? So before that, the thinking was the celestial body was kind of a big picture of stars just sitting there, no?
Yeah.
And he defied that idea, mm-hmm. that the celestial body were just there, no? The only way that he saw that dates and I were different is because there was movement, I said.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to explain that movement. Mm-hmm. No. And that is something really novel to his time.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's a revolutionary idea that celestial body was not just a thing over the earth,
mm-hmm.
it was a space.
Mm-hmm.
And it has different distances from one to another.
Yeah.
No, the concept that there was death in the celestial body,
yeah.
is a new concept. Instead of just everything is fixed up there.
Yeah.
The concept of death, the concept of one thing beyond the, yeah. other thing. Yeah. It's a novel idea that he's introducing.
No? Well, and yeah, as you said a few times, looking at, well, what is the structure of the universe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There is another thing that also I want to highlight, no? The fact that he thinks that the stars were 9 times the, mm-hmm. distance, that came from his worldview that most of the Greeks believe from Theogony.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Theogony is about the Greek gods.
Mm-hmm.
No? And there, again, as we mentioned before, you will try to be as far as objective as possible, but your worldview is, mm-hmm. always going to influence your hypothesis.
Yeah, yeah.
In his worldview, the gods fall from 9 days from the star to
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he put 9 times the distance,
yeah.
and then 18 times the moon, and 27 mm-hmm. times, no?
Yeah, well, and looking at the, as you said, the development of logic, you know, this is, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years before we have any concept of the idea of gravity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and so it's like, well, how can you calculate the distance and that it's 9 times? Well, that's not, yeah. has nothing to do with the speed of the, how they, the speed of their falling, of the speed of gravity or anything. He took this truth that he believed about the, yeah. falling of the angels. It took 9 days. Like, okay, well, let's come up with some structure,
mm-hmm.
that explains that.
Mm-hmm.
If we believe that if there is actually a true size to the earth, mm-hmm. there's a diameter to the earth, well, then, and we know that it took them 9 days to fall from the stars, well, then let's put a measurement on that.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's just that, this beginning of this idea of let's try and make measurements. Let's try and even, you know, put values on, mm-hmm. on distances that, okay, well, 9 days to fall from the stars.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at whatever the diameter of the earth is, and he doesn't say any values.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, okay, well, since the earth is, you know, 2,000 kilometers across,
yeah.
2,000 stanza, what, you know,
mm-hmm.
then it must be, you know, 18,000. There's no, it's all relative measurements.
Yes.
It's to say, well, let's just take the diameter of the earth, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Say the stars are 9 times that distance, mm-hmm. you know, that the moon is two times that, and the sun is, you know, three times that.
Yeah.
It's this first step of building a structure.
Yes.
And trying to make, as we said, as best as he could at the time, trying to put numbers and distances mm-hmm. to those, to that structure.
Yes. And again, he makes a logical structure. He makes his observation, and then his worldview is in the hypothesis. And through the, you know, through all the physicists that we are going to go further in, mm-hmm. in this episode, we'll see that their conclusions there were heavily also rely, their hypotheses there were heavily rely on their worldview.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
It's something that you have to take into account because.
Yep. Yep. Well, and as you said before, the important thing, especially when, you know, the episode where we respond to some of the comments, the important thing, thinking about how your worldview relates to your hypothesis. What's most important is that you have the humility
mm-hmm.
to say, as you're doing your experimentation, as you're doing your measurements, whatever work you're doing, based on your hypothesis, to have the humility to say, okay, I can see in my hypothesis, I can see where mm-hmm. my worldview shapes my hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to do some measurements, experimentation,
mm-hmm.
to have the humility to say, it looks like what I'm observing in my experimentation, in my measurements, might show me that some part of my worldview isn't quite correct.
Yeah.
Is either wrong or just a little off.
Yes.
The humility to say, okay, well, I'm going to continue making these observations. I might have to change my worldview based on that.
And that takes a lot of courage and humility.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a lot of courage and humility. And that's really important because you will see in later in scientifics, great scientifics like Newton, for example, when his worldview was the universe is as always it was, if he thought about, wait, gravity makes the things get closer and gravity is just an attractive force,
mm-hmm.
then probably the universe was, but his worldview was so strong
mm-hmm.
that he didn't make that prediction.
Mm-hmm.
No? Now, right now, everybody will admit, yeah, there was a big bang and there was an expanding universe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this idea is just 80 or 70 or 80 years old, no more.
Well, yeah, as we've said before, even Einstein.
Yes, even Einstein.
Early in his life,
yeah.
thought that the universe was static.
Exactly. That's
so. That's years after Newton.
Yeah. You know,
thousands of years after Anaximander. But as we said, mm-hmm. you look at the worldview
mm-hmm.
that people had at the time of Anaximander.
Yeah.
That he had to have gone through the same process in his own mind to say, what I'm observing, what if the Earth was floating?
Yes.
In space. What I'm viewing doesn't make sense if, as you saw in the diagram that he drew, what I'm seeing in the sky doesn't make sense if the sun cannot go below the horizon of the Earth.
Yes.
Therefore, there has to be a definite size to the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun has to be moving
mm-hmm.
on a circle
mm-hmm.
that can go below the Earth.
Yes.
Therefore, there has to be space under the Earth for the sun to go to. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the Earth has to be floating
mm-hmm.
in space and not just going on forever and with everything just up in the sky. I mean, the humility and as you said, the courage to go against.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are many, many people at in his time that looked at his ideas and said, "You're crazy. That's not how the universe works." As we know, the Earth goes on, mm-hmm. and that's not the structure of the universe. Yes. And he says, "But it doesn't make sense."
Yes. That's beautiful that you put it like that. It doesn't make sense, no? And even so, this, you know, the fact that the sun and the moon has a definite path around, no? And, mm-hmm. and goes in these circles, this path, this idea will continue until Copernicus.
Mm-hmm.
Until Copernicus. We are talking that idea that Anaximander established, there was there at least for 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's Copernicus, we are talking about 1500,
yeah.
1600, no?
Yeah.
At least 2,000 years. That is how deep his ideas were on the universe.
Mm-hmm.
No? He put the idea of the sun and the moon has to be in a path,
mm-hmm.
that a circle path around the earth. No? That idea will go until Copernicus, when yeah. we will have something different around.
Well, that, and even thinking, a few hundred years later, as we're gonna see the shift
mm-hmm.
from the Earth being a flat disk,
yeah.
being a round globe.
Yep,
that's a huge development, but it still is not a huge change to the structure
yeah.
of the universe that he had.
Yes, yes.
It just changes the shape of the Earth that's in the middle of these disks of the stars mm-hmm. and the moon and the sun.
Yep. I think that the history doesn't make that much credit to Anaximander.
Mm-hmm.
No. He really have a lot of revolutionary ideas that he has put in his model here, no. But after the discussions, I think that it was great that we put at least one episode on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good place to start because, yes. as you said, this really is the starting point
yeah.
of now 2,500, 2,600 years of saying, how do we understand the structure of the universe, the how different parts of the universe interact,
mm-hmm.
And we'll see as we're going on this, just as we did with math, this slow development and a deeper understanding of the universe that we live in.
Yep. Definitely. Yep. Definitely.
Yep. Well, I want to thank you. Was there anything else you wanted to say?
No, I mean, it was a nice conversation about Anaximander, yeah. and we are going to continue with this conversation for another great physics, Greek physics in our history.
Yeah. Well, we hope you come back for that, and we hope you continue to come back for this conversation on the history of physics.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to encourage you, wherever you are, as you're thinking about Anaximander, and as we continue to look at the history of physics, to think about this idea that we always come back to, that this search for truth,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's what we're all about, that we want to understand. We want to understand this world that we live in. We want to understand the universe that we live in, and we want to understand the truth. And we're going to seek that truth however we can.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to encourage you to continue to seek for the truth. And however you find that, whether it's in science, whether it's in faith, mm-hmm. In philosophy, just remember that you can't have any truth that contradicts another truth.
Yes.
And however you're seeking for that truth, that's important. And as Catholics, you know, we know, or we see where that truth leads to, but what's important is the seeking for truth, right?
And also, I want to highlight, please put some comments, you know, put your ideas on this. But whenever you put your comments, for example, if you think, no, that thing is wrong, please, in the name of reasoning and pursuit of truth, put why you think you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That is really important, because one thing is say you're wrong and that's it, because that's how things are. And another thing is, you know, I think you're wrong because of this evidence, no, that we can see,
yeah.
Or even bring your own logic into your writing. This is how we enrich the discussion around science, no,
yeah.
And the pursuit of truth, no,
yeah.
And we love to see your comments, and we are looking forward
absolutely.
To it.
Yes. Absolutely, yeah, we love every comment that we receive, and I would say, along with that, just avoid the one phrase that we're not really big fans of. Science says.
Yes.
There's not a guy.
I didn't meet that guy, Science.
I've never met Science before, but apparently he says a lot
of
stuff. So, well, we want to thank you for joining us today in this conversation. As Cesar said, we hope you, if you have any thoughts, any questions, any feedback on what we're going through, please leave them in the comments below. Please like this video, subscribe to our channel, and share this video or podcast with your friends. Bring them into the conversation as well. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list to get updates on what we're putting out and the latest things we're working on. You can go over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch and get, you know, the latest t-shirts and mugs and things that we're putting out. That is a great way to help support our channel. All the profit that comes from those sales goes to support the work that we're doing. But you can also now head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/support to directly support us financially, and we would appreciate any help that you can give. And so we hope to see you again here in a couple weeks. Thanks for joining us. All right, God bless.